This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket online at WTK.com. It's now time for the MGO Blog Roundtable brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you work directly with the owner, a Michigan man, Matt Demarest.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Here on the Michigan Insider, I say I'm Web, Ira Weintraub on the other side of the glass. I mentioned that there would be no Ed Fang. Maybe there will be no break. We'll see.
I'll keep my eye on the hallway.
Heavy night of drinking wild turkey, probably. Something like that.
But we do have Craig Ross. Yeah. So, that in and of itself. Yeah. Is reason to have the round table because Craig is in the house.
So, Sam, as we start here, I would like to start this the way we started last Thursday at about 5 o'clock. So we went out, we did some stretching, and then the first guy on the sliding drill station
was Craig Ross,
head first, right down the pipe.
When my wife found that out, she was mad at me.
Why?
She said, "Why? You're sliding? What's wrong with you? You're old man." So what do you...
But you got back up. I saw Craig. He was jumping to catch balls at the fence.
Jumping is a slight exaggeration.
But, I mean, it was full extension.
Yeah. I lifted my arm up.
Did you have fun?
Yeah, I had great. It was great fun. The kids were terrific. The coaches were terrific.
I thought the last station, sitting down with Hutch, was
really interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Here's Brian. He, you know, looks a little bit worse for wear for the old granddad, but otherwise he's all right.
He said you're out drinking wild turkey. That's the deal. That's Craig's explanation for where you were drinking wild turkey.
There's a long story that has to do with alarms in the morning and my wife. But
gotcha. Right. Gotcha. So, but we were also talking about how Craig went Ken Griffey at the wall last week, catching a fly ball at Softball Academy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that must be fascinating for all of them.
But no, we got a chance to really.
It was a lot of fun. I encourage people to do it in the future.
You get the kind of insight in person, you know, without not on a microphone from the coaches, mm-hmm. that is really, I think, of great value.
And she was quite open. Mm-hmm. Hutch was quite open about questions where, mm-hmm. you know, it wasn't. She didn't really have to be, but she was.
But
so that
she was.
Nice.
Yeah. No coach speak.
There was no coach there. Yeah. So it was good.
But, starting out on the basketball side of things.
Yeah. First, I'd like to talk about Lester Quinones. In the last week, the exact language is curious. I said there were, quote, structural problems with his recruitment. I don't know how else to say it. Maybe Brian will be more explicit. I don't know. But that visit was, quote, canceled by Michigan.
Yes.
And I paid no attention to his recruitment at all because I just didn't see it as plausible.
That they would stay in it?
That they would stay in that particular recruitment. And that turned out to be true. I tried to hint at that last week. Meanwhile, today at noon, we've got the Justin Pierce announcement. I think that's going to go North Carolina's way. I don't know if Brian has any different information. But
I mean, I'm not the recruiting guy. Sam's the recruiting guy.
Right. Well, I don't know what Sam thinks, but I think it's going North Carolina's way just from...
Well, I've been talking about Javen Cumberland this morning.
That's another clue. You know, personally, I'll say this... With the odd chance that he may end up at Michigan, he felt like not the world's greatest fit for Michigan, not because he isn't a good athlete or a good basketball player, because I think he is, but he feels like a three to me. From the tape I watched, he can't really guard a two, and I think it was Brian or Sam last week who says you are who you can guard, and I couldn't see him guarding anybody really on the perimeter.
No, there were some Duncan Robinson vibes there, yeah.
Yeah, I think the pitch was, you know, your wing with maybe some spot duty at the two. I mean, we are recruiting you, Justin, to be a two.
Okay.
You might moonlight there at the two, but really you're going to be on the wing, give us some wing shooting, be a primary guy.
Yeah.
On this team.
And my concern with that is that Michigan next year will obviously Livers will be the primary forward on the team, but you've also got Johns, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, Bajima. And you've got
Wilson,
who are all threes, who also can maybe play a little bit of two, depending on who they can guard, but offensively they can play two.
Benjamin is a guy who projects to the two, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. And so
but
all
he also projects as, like, Karis. Like, so he's going to come in, and it's going to be like, where is the rest of you?
Yeah, right, he's thin.
But he's strong. It might be a situation where, out of necessity, you know, minutes are going to be available if they don't land any of these guys. I mean, it remains to be seen. Cumberland, Bones, yeah. Highland. Right. Franz, of course, but you know, hey, maybe Bajima is ready to come
I,
in.
I love and give his some... I love his tape and I mean in the beginning.
I'd be surprised. You know, Karis was the Ohio Player of the Year, and Bajima plays at a school with four people. They don't even have a whole team because they only have four people on the team.
I think that's right.
So it's a little bit different situation for him. I think he's going to need a year to like. Adapt.
That's probably right. He was also Player of the Year in Washington, albeit for his division.
Well, and like I said, maybe out in the city. See, Karis, I don't think it was. I think his skills demanded he be on the floor, even at his frail sort of.
Yeah, but his impact as a freshman was minimal.
Uh huh.
So he got some playing time. He did a couple of good things here and there, but wasn't really like Michigan needs 30 minutes from somebody at the two.
And so. I think you're right in tempering expectations for him if he is in that role. I mean,
now I
think you should expect a world beater.
When I heard you mention Cumberland, now I think we recruited his brother who went to Cincinnati.
Jerron Cumberland.
Yeah, but this kid, so I had 30 minutes to when I heard you this morning to scrounge around, and he had a pretty good year at Oakland.
He had a strange career because he came out of nowhere. Like he's playing at Oakland. And he doesn't even really get, 10 minutes a game until last year.
Yeah, 37, though, a game last year. And he averaged over 17 points a game, shot 40% from three, 48%, 47.5% from two.
I mean, he was just a shooter, but that's that's what Michigan needs at the two right now.
Right, and he also had some steals. Now, I couldn't, in the half hour I had to check him out, I couldn't really see if he could play defense or not.
Mm-hmm.
He in their last game against Northern Kentucky, who was a decent team, he put up 27 points in their one-point loss and 7 of 14 from three and had some pretty good games against decent schools. And that's one thing that bothered me about Pierce is that he never played a good game against a decent school.
Well, you're also talking about those were mostly coming when he's a freshman.
Well,
last
year he had a bad game against Virginia. He didn't play against Notre Dame for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the thing that maybe has him down on some of the lists, Cumberland on some of the grad transfer rankings lists is what you guys pointed out. He wasn't a guy until last year.
Right.
And so, whereas Justin Pierce, I mean, his track record is more established than this kid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is that, but he is a guy that Saidi would be very familiar with if Michigan were to land him, recruiting him.
And
out
his
of Ohio.
numbers look completely good. He also had a good turnover rate. He was a relatively low turnover guy. So there's at least on the numbers there's a lot there to like. I just haven't watched enough. I watched some of his high school tape and he does have legitimately decent mechanics on his shot. He has a real jump shot inside the three.
That's fine. At this point, man, I'd be all in on Bones, though. Just tease.
Well, let's go back to him. I had the chance to look more at Bones the last week, and he's a legitimately good player, but Kansas has gotten involved. UConn is involved, has been involved. Kansas got involved this last week. And
so,
go ahead.
You know, I think that they are working. He mentioned, and we had a piece up on him on the MichiganInsider.com. Brian Snow talked to him last week. He mentioned that he's trying to get up for a visit. But, you know, just like his on-court kind of his on-court life was affected by everything that happened to him off the floor, I think you have to give room for working through whatever impact that had on him in the classroom as well. I think that's one of the reasons why the prep school talk is being talked. I mean, yeah, for a guy who can play like that with the schools that are on his list, I mean, you can infer from that, wait a minute, why are you talking prep school when you got Michigan, you got Kansas, you got some big time high majors on you, and yet there's talk of him potentially going prep. I think that's an academic thing. So that's the story for him.
So maybe good news for Michigan is if he does go the prep route. But
he said he's leaning towards being a 2019. But I think the only thing that would hold you back,
right,
if you have those schools as options, would be
especially Michigan, because one, they've got a need, and two, he can play. And he can play the position.
He's a ball player.
Yeah, and so that has to be the deal there. Now, I don't want, you know, we're sort of overlooking the fact that I think, I'm probably in a minority, that I think Eli Brooks can actually play the position and play it pretty well. And Sam is shaking his head, no, he can't.
So I came across this attempt to apply an NBA stat to the NCAA yesterday, and it's a very thick stat. It's basically an adjusted plus minus that takes into account who you're playing with, who you're playing against, and does some other strange mathematical things. And it's a very dense stat. You need to take it in context, because it's one of those things where, you know, there are five Texas Tech players in the top 50 on the defense side of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is not Tariq Owens. So why is that? It's because he had a really good backup in Nerens Odiasse. And Texas Tech was actually a tiny bit worse with him on the floor in terms of points per possession. Does that mean Tariq Owens is not one of the best defenders in the country? No. And what happens if you don't have Odiasse on your team and you have just some Jamoke? Well, then Owens shoots up that rating as your team gets worse. Mm-hmm. So it's a plus-minus set. It needs to be taken in context. It is interesting for Michigan's purposes because Eli Brooks, strong negative on the offensive side of the ball, but plus 3.6 on defense. Like, he looks like Michigan's, you know, fifth best defender last year, which says something, because Isaiah Livers was actually
pretty good,
in the top 15 nationally.
So
if he's got a little juice on defense, and if he can just, like, hit some shots. Like, he can't be a 30% three-point shooter. He's got to be a 40% three-point shooter. But
I mean, if you don't have any other choice.
Well, I mean, come on. I mean, there's a couple things here. One is Beilein has gone out of his way to say that Eli can play defense.
Look, yeah. I'm trying not to come across the wrong way.
Right.
Well, you already have.
I don't mean to say that he brings nothing to the table.
What I'm saying is if
he winds up being your starter, you know, the idea that there isn't going to be, you know,
it's just going to be tough because you got X on the court at the same time, and like he's a guy who's got, if he's going to play off the ball, he's got to be able to can threes at a high rate and like difficult threes. Like, he's got to have that kind of Ryan Klein aspect if he's going to play with that.
Like, it's not like JP was a, what is he, like 12 point, like 13 points a game. It's not like JP was putting up
starting
huge,
January 1st, he was 30% from three.
It's not like he was putting up huge numbers. But I think it would be asking a lot to expect him to give you even what JP gave you.
Well, let me make an argument here. One, Beilein, aside from the numbers, which I think are accurate, and aside from my eyesight, which I think is maybe not quite as accurate, but still, Beilein has gone out of his way to say that Eli's a good defender.
Yeah.
And I think he is
probably. Which is a certain kind of praise.
Right. And I think also that given the fact that you have two other elite defenders and one other guy who's a good defender in Livers on this team.
I think Livers, I've been looking at stuff. the lineup with Teske and Iggy on the floor has, and then you put either Livers or Matthews out there.
Yeah.
Like that was 300 possessions of Livers, Iggy, yeah. Teske over the course of the year, and about 700 for Matthews.
Okay.
And those lineups give up the exact same number of points per possession.
Well, that's pretty. That says a lot for Livers.
I think this stat, like the thing that leapt out to me is that, like, I think Michigan is still going to have three elite defenders next year.
Okay, and so, and this is part of my argument, Ray Brooks. I mean, if you've got three elite defenders, let's put a fourth good defender on the floor because that has value.
I think it has less value because how many
more value.
How many like teams are really going to be able to put out four guys who are like, oh, I got to check that guy? Not many. So
yeah, and let me make another part of the argument, and that is something that you guys have discounted, and I admit I kick a dead horse on, but it's something that Larry Bird said. Larry Bird said, when you go out on the court, if you're going to be effective, you have to have the right to miss. Now remember a couple years ago when Michigan's point guards were the three-way combination of Jaron Simmons, X, and Eli Brooks. Brooks actually, I think, started the one or two of the first. None of those guys was effective and in that rotation. And the reason why, in part, why none of them was affected, because they're looking over their shoulders. None of them had the right to miss. And let's go back and look at your Javon Cumberland guy. When he's playing 5 minutes a game, he's not very effective. Last year, at 37 minutes a game, he put up some good numbers. And
I don't think that. I mean, a lot of our
Sam is giving me the fish eye.
I guess, for me, look, I thought that they really empowered him to shoot last year. I mean, to encourage him. You can't be on the floor if you are a self-check, if you are unwilling to shoot the basketball.
So there was a streak when he was looking over his shoulder.
No, but see, there was also a point where they're like, shoot the basketball. We are telling you to shoot the basketball. I mean, so you are looking over your shoulder at that point.
I just think that that's a tough criticism to level at Beilein. Like, he's going to be like, don't shoot. I just don't think that's the case. Like, I think, you know, Beilein is the guy who, when you cut the commercial and he didn't take the shot, he's saying, shoot the fudging basketball, right? Like, that's, like, he's not, like, if you take an open three, it doesn't matter who you are, you're going to be like, that's fine, that's a good shot.
Right.
So, you know, Livers did that a little bit, and Eli did it a lot last year. He did kind of get a little traction towards the end of the year, where he was shooting close to 40% and had a little bit of usage in his last six, seven, eight, nine games. So, like, but you know, you need
put it this way. If they land Bones Highland, if they got a Javon Cumberland, you know, if somehow they
those
got
would be
Franz,
good things for Michigan. There's no doubt.
You land any of those guys, your two is coming from someone in that mix.
I'm not so sure that's true. Eventually,
maybe not to start, because he'll have the advantage in knowing the system, but to think that that's going to be your starting two the entirety of the season, the only way that happens is if you don't land any of those
last
guys, in my opinion.
September, October, you said to us, said maybe it was during a break,
Don't repeat that
David DeJulius would be Michigan's starting point guard by January.
I did not say that. I said he would be the backup. He would have moved past
Eli.
Brooks.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody crazy enough to say that Simpson.
Okay, I misquoted you. I apologize.
Maybe Zeke thought that that he would get sat down. But no, I mean, one of my things about last season, maybe it was the case that Dave wasn't, you know, mistake-free enough to get on the floor. But I felt like, and this is just my own personal opinion, not having been in practice.
Yeah.
I say, hey, man, play the dude. Because he, by the midway point, because he was a guy that hopefully his mistakes would have been functional. And down the line, he wouldn't have been making those same mistakes. Yeah. And he just gives you more moxie on the floor, more skill on the floor than Eli Brooks does. So I would have played him for that reason, for the upside reason that at the end of the day, he's going to be able to provide me more at the end of the season. Now that's a strategic move that John Beilein went the other way, and you can't knock his decisions. He's seen him
every day.
Yeah, well, I mean, he sees him every day, and obviously they had Sweet 16 success.
We're also talking about a team that, I mean, remember the Binghamton game where, you know, it's very tight for half. They were down at the half.
I think we're down for,
you know, they're in a game with Western Michigan the whole way. Like, their offensive issues made it difficult to, like, throw a guy out there and be like, have some fun, play ball. You know, it just...
I hear you. I just, you know, the gap with those guys, you know, maybe it was too big to justify that. I guess for me, my personal preference would have been take the hit for now, because down the line it's going
to
pay off.
I'm not even saying
he would have played better in that moment where John was like, hey, man, we can't play this guy right now. He's probably, I mean, he sees him every day. He's probably right. Eli Brooks probably would have and probably did play better than Dave DeJulius would have played at that time. But what would that mistake have meant? Those mistakes have meant for Dave later in the season. So I'm still with what I said to you last year at this time. I think I would have went Dave DeJulius at that point. Hopefully, I think it'll work out that way this year.
I think Dave DeJulius will move past Eli Brooks.
Okay. So we'll see. We got to get to a break. I keep getting the break sign from Ira. Like, get to the damn break, damn it. He's sparing your ears, but he was giving me sides like that. Right. We got to get to a break. Back on the other side, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. Back on the MGO Blog Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. So I don't know who I cut off when we went to a
break. It was always Craig.
you were done making your case for Eli Brooks.
He's done now.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Michigan fans should be too depressed about Eli Brooks being the primary guy at the two next year. I think there's a lot there. I think this is going over.
We've already hashed and rehashed.
But I also think that David DeJulius, you know, from what we saw in high school, has a good chance to play either the one or the two, and so I'm hopeful there too. The other thing is that I think Cumberland probably as a two may even be a better fit for Michigan than Justin Pierce. So I'm not too depressed about that. If that's the way that one goes.
Yeah, and I don't think said before, I don't think the pitch was Justin Pierce, you're two. I think it was. It might be situational, they told Iggy. I mean, Iggy was part of the pitch to him. Like, at times here or there, you might get some minutes in the backcourt, but primarily you're a wing. And I think that's the discussion with Justin Pierce. But, you know, we'll see what he announces coming up at noon.
Yeah.
Personally, not holding my breath.
And the other thing is, for Michigan fans who are interested in the future, there's a 2020 named Jabri Abdur-Rahim. Now, is that the son or the
son of Sharif?
It's a son of
Sharif. So the bag is not really a big bag.
That's what I was going to point out. It's one of the reasons why Michigan can get a guy like Glenn Robinson or Tim Hardaway Jr., where that bag isn't relevant.
Yeah, he's a big-time academic kid, too. Mm-hmm. You know, the school he goes to, Blair Academy, is just off the charts good. Michigan fans should be familiar, because that's David Ajabo's school. It's off the charts expensive, too. Mm-hmm. But David Ajabo's school, so he's...
I don't think Ajabo is paying his freight there. I mean, right? They have scholarships for...
Maybe. Wow. I know. I'm talking about maybe he's on scholarship. I don't know that.
Okay.
It was why I say maybe. You know, he's a transplant from overseas.
Yeah.
I think, you know, highly educated parents, so...
Yeah,
I don't know what his what
I just
his pay
assume
situation
that
was.
Those kind of schools, whenever you have like a varsity athlete, that they're like, we'll let it slide.
Maybe.
You know, Abdur-Rahim. I watched a lot of his tape over the last week. I mean, he's 6'6" or pretty close. He's sturdy. He's got a phenomenal jump shot. He's a great scorer. Good left hand. You know, I see him as a two, but he could probably play the three if you need him to play the three. And when I looked at the schools that were recruiting him, I thought, okay, this is plausible for us because it's Harvard, Notre Dame, Georgetown, Villanova. You said Georgia's in it. But
Georgia's in it because his uncle is on the staff.
Right.
So that's like a bunch of high academic schools, and then Tom Crean.
Right. And they've been
They've been on him pretty hard. I think all of the talk, I guess, to me, the significance of emphasizing the relationship there is not that, you know, they're not just their presence on the list, but all the talk a little while back that he was, you know, he was a Georgia lean and crystal balls for Georgia. I think that was a function of, he thinks it was a function of that his uncle was on the staff there, but he was adamant, I'm not a lock to go there. I'm looking around at some serious options. He's a serious academic kid, as you pointed out, with the schools that are recruiting him. He has a tie here in David Ajabo that's really pumping Michigan up. He's gotten to know Jalen Wilson really well. They spent a lot of time at the NBA camp together last year. He really highlights that and appreciates that Michigan stayed consistent in his recruitment because he was hurt last AAU season. Some of the schools that were recruiting him kind of fell off. Michigan was one of the more consistent schools with contactees. Formed a pretty good relationship with Saadi Washington. So that's a, he's a 2020 that I think they have a really good shot at.
I think Beilein saw him twice, went out to his games twice this week too, and he had big games both times.
And he went out, I think he went out, I want to say in December. I know he went out during the high school season to check him out as well. So he's a guy. He's a guy for them. Yeah, for sure.
So in any event, that seems to be what's on the horizon, and but we don't know. Right now, Michigan has two scholarships to give. What's going to happen with them?
Probably two scholarships to give.
Probably, because there's some noise about Iggy, maybe.
Give him 95% gone, man. Yeah. I mean, I only mention it not to gas up hope, but to make it clear that he has not given them definitive word that he's out. And I told you guys, when JP was out there, it's like, look, he's done. And that's because he is telling them he's done. Iggy hasn't done that yet. So we can think he's done and say he's most likely done, but he hasn't given definitive word that he is done.
And the rules are, as I get it, I mean, he has 24 hours after the draft.
That rule's not yet been adopted by the NBA Players Association. He has to withdraw before the draft.
The day is the 29th, I think is the
He
date.
Has to withdraw before the draft. So if he, you know, he's going to get drafted, I think, at some spot anyway. So I'm not sure the new rule would make any difference.
I mean, the things I've seen, they have both Poole and Iggy in, like, the second half of the second round. And in that situation, it's kind of like, that could be, no, mm-hmm. you could not get drafted. But we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Time will tell on that. So, you know, interesting note. This is a total aside, but I don't know if you guys followed the federal trial.
I read the Wetzel article on Dawkins' testimony.
I thought it was an outstanding piece by Dan Wetzel.
Yeah, it's good.
He did a great job of painting the picture inside the courtroom about how Christian Dawkins. For those who don't know, he's been indicted. I think it was bribery. They said he was trying to bribe.
I think he's been convicted of.
Yeah, but this is a different.
This is a different trial.
This is a different trial, and in this trial, they are alleging that he was bribing college coaches. And he said no. I mean, he was bribing college coaches. He said no. We were actually running a scam on some financial advisors. That's his defense. He said, you know, we were paying people, but we were paying kids and their parents. He readily admits that. He said, why would you pay college coaches? There's no need to pay college coaches. That's like giving money away. And so the way that he's proving his point, the financial guy who was an undercover FBI agent came in and said, hey, we want to give this money to college coaches. Christian Dawkins is saying that's stupid. We don't need to give money to college coaches. The guy is persistent, saying, I'm funding you. We're going to pay college coaches. Christian Dawkins says, okay, we're going to pay college coaches to get players to sign up with our agency. So I'm going to bring in, I know this coach, Preston Murphy from Creighton, and we are going to get Craig Ross to sign with our agency. He's going to help us sign Craig Ross. And the guy says, cool, here's $6,000. And so he gives some money to Preston Murphy, some money to Christian Dawkins, and that's proof that you're trying to bribe coaches. And Christian Dawkins is saying no, because Craig Ross, the player on Creighton's basketball roster, does not exist.
Yeah.
He does not exist. There's no such player. We were just running a scam on this guy. We after he left, the coach gave me the money and I deposited it in my account. So he is kind of laying bare, you know, how things really work. And the fact that the FBI was probably zealously pursuing, you know, a case based on a false premise, at least this one.
Yeah. And he pointed out that there's no point in trying to pay college coaches, not only because the college coaches aren't like the kids, but like the kids, by the time they get to college, it's already done. You know, they when they're in AAU, when like they're choosing their colleges, like that's, they've already gotten the money. They've already selected who they're going to go.
Yeah, I mean, you can try to influence guys to change, because once once they get ready to go pro, there's nothing that would force them to stay with an agent. So some guys switch, but your currency, the currency for an agent with a high school coach is not dollars. The currency is what other guys can you get? Because agents, runners, they have relationships with guys in high school. So I can give you an example without mentioning a name, but I remember distinctly a situation where an agent was, or a guy who was becoming an agent, was saying at that time to Tommy Amaker, I can get you X player, this player to sign with you, but you have to, you know, your guys that are going to be draft eligible, you got to influence them to sign with you.
Come back. Well, that's the scam right now.
So the currency is the players, not, hey, I'm going to give you $6,000. Help me with this guy. That's not how it works. And I'm surprised that the FBI, didn't look at the Creighton roster.
Going after draft eligible Amaker players, though, that's not a good. Not a good strategy.
I hear you, but there were a few. There are a few that wound up going to the pros, and when you're starting out, I mean, every guy that goes to the pros in some capacity needs an agent. So if you're starting out, it's not like you're going to be getting the first rounders. So
I mean, that system gives complete plausible deniability to coaching staffs too. Anything about this. This is just the financial part. Unless you're Arizona,
and you're directly paying DeAndre Ayton $10,000 a month.
Right.
Like what are you doing, Sean Miller? Like, what is Arizona doing? How is he still the coach?
That's
a former assistant of his too. It's not like just some dude. It's like an assistant coach at Arizona who's been caught up in this and fired is like, the head coach was directly paying a college athlete. And the Arizona's like,
the way in which it was revealed, I think, is really compelling, that it was on a wiretap. And it's not like he was talking to Christian Dawkins.
Yeah.
You know, so they're having a casual conversation about how can we get DeAndre Ayton to sign with your agency. And the assistant is like, he has this arrangement with Sean Miller. We need Sean Miller to get him out of the way, but he's paying him $10,000 a month right now, so he's working through. That's how it came to light. So that to me would make it more believable.
Yeah,
the way they wish they discovered it.
I want Ward to come out and just be like, we're gonna pay our kids $100,000 a year, and if you guys want to do something about it, okay, because like it's just stupid. These rules are unenforceable. They're not being enforced. And what for what? You know, what's the point of rules that you just don't have anywhere near the capability to like enforce?
And Will Wade, as we get to a break, I think there was something about a $300,000 offer. And this Arizona assistant is like, hey, man, give me half that. I'll get you the guy.
Right, yeah.
I'll get you the guy. Give me half the money. So. Hey, man, he still has a job.
It's incredible.
There you go.
They unsuspended him. They were like, he wouldn't talk to them at first. And they're like, we've got to suspend this guy. And then he comes in here, and what's he going to tell them? I have the strong ass offer I was referring to was about a study hall where we have a really good building.
And so he thought he had to offer Javonte Smart money to get him. He was mad when his offer didn't seem like it was good enough, and then Javonte Smart winds up signing with him for free.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all of a sudden he decided, didn't take anything above and beyond a scholarship to get him. Come on, man. That just doesn't pass the sniff test.
It doesn't.
We got to get to the break.
The NCAA. Oh, we'll get back
to that. On the other side. On the other side here of the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. I know you wanted to get a little football in before you got out of here, Craig.
Well, I don't know. I wanted to get a little NCAA in. I mean, briefly on the NCAA. I mean, what the NCAA cares about is in some context hard to figure out. I mean, recall they punished Mitch McGarry for a performance-depressing drug that he took while he wasn't playing, while he was sitting on the bench and injured, and essentially ripped a year off of him in his basketball career for no apparent real reason. Jamal Crawford, that story we've talked about before, is terrible, beyond terrible. A kid who wanted to be in school, wanted to be a student, didn't want to go into the NBA, was unhappy even after he made millions in the NBA because he wasn't in school. And what they did to him was unconscionable. And Wetzel wrote about that, too. Mm-hmm. So they don't really care about kids or players. What they care about is Delaney making his $10 million bonus. And
that was 20.
20. Well, one year 10, then he was 20, so whatever he gets. That's what they care about. They don't really care about kids and what's in their interests. And that's proven again and again. In terms of football, I just wanted to say, first of all, Gunnar Hoke. I mean, Gunnar Hoke is a transfer.
He's a grad transfer quarterback to Ohio State because they don't have anyone after Fields anymore.
Right. And this sort of points out because Gunnar Hoke threw 26 passes in his career in 3 years, completed 13. Ohio State is desperate at the position. And I think that's, good news for Michigan next year.
Good news if Justin Fields doesn't play. But
it'd be interesting to see if it affects how they use him. Like, do you run him less, even though that's the strength of his game?
Yeah.
Do you run him less?
I thought he was more in the
pocket. No, he's
mode.
More of a runner.
Well, I think he has potential to be a guy who can be a big-time passer, but right now he's not accurate. That's what I mean. I mean, he has a gun. He has a tremendous arm, but he's not accurate.
So they're going to start Shane Morris?
And he's an impressive athlete. And I think he can buy time with his legs. He can make plays with his legs. Does he, is that his primary mode of operation coming up this fall as he tries to learn that system? That to me is the interesting question. Do they depress him as a runner based on their lack of depth?
Yeah. So. And the other thing is that I found interesting was Don Brown talking up his defense in ways that seemed maybe to me.
You called him Fred Jackson.
Yeah, I called it, it felt a little unrealistic. I mean, the exact quote is, I don't remember a secondary and back seven as integrated in coverage, playing as solid as a group, as physical, as mistake-free as this group this spring.
Man, that makes
sense. Yeah, Fred was a little prone to hyperbole.
A little prone to hyperbole.
I think the Anton Campbell, Gale Sayers comparison was maybe the one that got the it sticks out the most in my mind.
But. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know if that's true. That's a great thing. I mean, that's awesome if that's... But, I mean, do you guys think that's...
He called Avery Horn Mike Hart, but fast. I remember that one.
Yeah, that one's not right.
I mean...
We love you, Freddie.
I mean...
Yeah, we do.
I also remember, Drake Johnson had a story about Fred Jackson where he's being recruited. He comes in. And, Fred Jackson gets up, I say, you want a Coke? And he says, yeah, no, thanks. And so Fred Jackson gets a Coke. And then 5 minutes later, he gets up and he gets, some juice. And he's like, hey, you want some juice? No, I don't want some juice. And 5 minutes later, he gets up and gets some water. And he's got, all these beverages on his, just constantly getting new beverages. And I was like, we're going to make fun of this. And I was like, oh, wait, I do the same thing. So there's my Fred Jackson story. I have tea and soda and water.
I was waiting for the
punchline.
Right. I didn't. It never came, but there you go. All right.
We're done for the year, right?
I got to tell you
go ahead.
I got a joke about the moth. Never mind.
No, stop.
who's got it better than us?